Welcome to El Telejón's La Liga Weekly. Congratulations to Real Madrid, 34 times champions of Spain, and well deserved. A fantastic sprint to the line. They even took time out to troll their critics with one last penalty flourish. We get so many, we're going to start doing cabaret numbers as we take them. Quick note to the ref, don't show your hand. There was no need. Barca had imploded. Messi's head was about to burst. Piqué was trying to backheel clearances. Artemelo was asleep in the stand. Martin Braithwaite was playing centre forward. They lost to 10 man Osasuna, and the manager looked like a supplying teacher, even down to the elbow patches. It was done. Save them for when they're needed. In the interest of balance, maybe it was a penalty. Actually, Madrid were robbed of a great goal. The spectre of David Ellery, Pierluigi Collina, and the old refs who make the laws and hate football, footballers, football fans, everything connected with football. They claim one last goal. Yes, football in 2019-20. Dodgy penalties. Tick. Vinicius beating four defenders and setting up Asensio. No thanks. Can we find a way of disallowing that, please? Rewind it and see if Benzema handballed it a minute ago or something. Bad luck to Mayorga. Just don't panic. A well played Leganés have taken it to the wire. The way they've been shafted this season, though, watch out for one more dodgy VAR call this weekend and get them relegated on Sunday. The Europa League battle goes on to Sunday. Somehow, Valencia are still in with the shot. And did you notice 28 players are suspended this weekend? Is there a party Saturday night that we haven't been invited to? I'm not making allegations. I just think it's a very high number. That's all. Terry Gibson is here. Terry, you never got yourself a dodgy suspension at the end of the season. Away holiday?
No, I don't see any rush either for the players. They're going to have time off again. They've just come back from 3 months off, but no, that's bizarre. The 28 players suspended. And also, we've got players that have just gone missing there, haven't they, because of the contract situations at clubs. So it's going to be interesting looking at the lineups for the last games of the season to see, you know, particularly those. Most of the games have still got something riding on them. So
The old suitcase days have gone, haven't they? There were some good performances by teams that didn't need them, weren't they? Like sort of Levante, Granada, and you know, in the past, teams used to roll over in that kind of situation, didn't it? That was seen as the noble thing to do.
Yep, no, it's pleasing to see. I mean, those rumours, to be fair, haven't happened for a few years now, have they? But you're right, Levante's performance at Celta and Granada at Mallorca gave the, you know, a clear indication that everything, you know, those teams both want to finish as high up as they possibly can in the league. I think there is performance-related bonuses as well, isn't there, for the teams finishing higher, as in the Premier League now. So yes, I think that takes away that necessity of maybe earning a few quid 10 years ago or 5 years ago, whenever it was, when you're mid-table and literally nothing to play for. But I don't think that's the case anymore in La Liga, thankfully.
Anyway, down to business. Let's talk about Real Madrid. I know we had a long chat about them the other day, and we sang their praises. So if you haven't heard that one, I know it was only a couple of days ago. So have a listen to that as well. But Real Madrid, deserved champions, and they scrap it out, Terry, don't they? It's not necessarily fluent football for 90 minutes of a game, and they were hanging on. And Courtois has definitely played his part. Let's give him some credit as well. But you know, it's been a terrific burst to the line.
It has, and I think they're entitled to scrap things out, because that was their 10th win on the trot. You know, the games have been coming thick and fast for all the teams involved, and I think that the players deserve a hell of a lot of credit. We're playing games in the heat of, you know, sort of 90 degrees late at night. The games are coming every 3 days, and Real Madrid are no different. And in fact, Zidane has chosen to use a pretty small group of players, hasn't he, for the majority of his games. So for them to keep churning out the performances, to keep churning out the results, I think we have to take into account, you know, how tough this little schedule has been, how grueling it's been, and they've just been so focused. They clearly were the team with the more motivation when they come back from the break, and, you know, winning La Liga seems to have been more important to them than to Barcelona. So it's, you know, to win 10 on the trot is astonishing. It's a great record, and it's one that they should be proud of. And, yeah, no doubt, I mean, the 7 points clear now, and they fully deserve to win the title.
I did a little poll on Twitter. I might just double-check, but it was who was the most important player to Real Madrid? Benzema was looking like a clear winner. I know you spoke the other day about Ramos's contribution in terms of his leadership, Terry, but Benzema's been getting a lot of love from Real Madrid fans this season.
I get it. But I don't think I'm. I can't deny Benzema has been and is a it can be a world class striker. That'd be stupid of me to say that. But I'm not getting the love in if I'm being honest. There's been periods of the season where he hasn't been good. We're hearing about this is Benzema's league. I don't agree with that. I think there's whenever a team wins the league, even with we've talked about Messi over the years, no one player ever wins the league. But I don't think that Benzema has done anything extraordinary this year. I really don't. I think is it the 20 goal mark? He's centre forward for Real Madrid. They're winning the league title. If it had got 35 goals, then it'd be a different matter. But I think he's been good. I don't want to sound daft and say he hasn't been good. He has been good, but I'm not getting the love in for Benzema in terms of how. He's stood out amongst a group of players. There's, like you mentioned, Courtois. I could mention Varane as well as Ramos, Danny Carvajal, the midfield players, Modric and Kroos, have just ticked along nicely and done their job. Casemiro has done his job. I think where Benzema falls into it is he's been the one attacking player that Real Madrid have been able to rely on this season. Because when you look at the rest of the players, Vinicius has had some good moments. Rodrigo Goes hasn't particularly shone on too many occasions. Hazard has had, other than winning the league title a season that he want to, put to bed and crack on and hopefully he's fitter and able to perform better next season. But I think it's a collective. It always is a collective. Yes, of course, there's players that do stand out and do become more important. And Benzema is one of those more important players for Real Madrid, such as Ramos. But I must admit, I'm not seeing anything extraordinary. I thought it was a good performance by Benzema last night. Took his goal well. He was fed well. He was slipped in well. And he hits the target, gets the goal, gets the second from the penalty spot. But yeah, he's been excellent. Don't get me wrong. But I do think particularly this league title win by Real Madrid. It's not one where they've scored 68. They've got the best defensive record with only 23 goals conceded in 37 games so far. So, yes, he is the first line of defence. He plays his part in that role. But, no, I think this has to go down as a collective success from Real Madrid. And I mentioned the skipper because that's his job to lead, and that's what he's done over the course of this season, and in particular in this spell of games. I mean, it's not long ago. I mean, it seems a long, long time ago now that we were talking about Zidane getting the sack this season. And I know in the context of a normal regular season, it is ages ago. They were struggling against Bruges in the Champions League and they'd lost some games early on in the season. And there was strong, stories, speculation, saying that was it the wrong thing for Zidane to come back? So I think amongst all of these, that we heap praise on, Zidane has to take a whole lot of credit for the season as well.
Yes. Just on the game last night, then the bizarre penalty. So if anyone hasn't seen it, well, where should we start? It was, you didn't think it was a penalty, I take it.
Like most people, I'm guessing. Yeah. Ramos has kicked Chiclana to initiate the foul. And you're kind of thinking, yeah, well, this won't be given, surely. But it was.
And then and then what they did with the penalty, we've seen it before, of course. I mean, Cruyff famously did it, didn't he? The ultimate messed it up Arsenal, wasn't it? Henri and Pires messed it up. Messi, Suarez. I mean, you could just kick the ball into the back of the net. That's always an option.
It's a good option for Sergio Ramos. He does it. He does it 22 times on the trot.
Yes.
So that's a good option. Especially when you need 3 points to win the league. But they had a plan, didn't they? And I'm sure you'll explain.
Well, so he basically passes it sideways, doesn't he? But Benzema has jumped the gun. Benzema's in. Yeah. So he's not quite offside, but he's well into the penalty area. He rolls it sideways and Benzema kicks it in the net. Ramos looks astonished that the goal hasn't been awarded, but the referee quite rightly points out that they've encroached. And then there's a huge argument about whether it's a retake or not. And now my understanding is, I didn't know this, but because the ball is still rolling before Benzema hits it, it counts as one penalty. And because the penalty was scored, encroachment leads to a retake. If the penalty has been missed, the encroachment does not lead to a retake. So I think they got the point of the law right.
But the penalty isn't scored, is it? The penalty is going sideways. So it would only be scored because Benzema is the second player participating.
Yeah, but while the ball is still rolling,
sideways,
it is still the penalty, no matter where you kick it.
I know.
Yes. I mean, of all the laws that we need to reform in football, I wouldn't have that one at the top of the list. I would have the one that denied Real Madrid their third goal last night. That one is just maddening, and this is where we've got to with these, with the over officious lawmaking combined with VAR, has given us this situation where we're getting loads of penalties that people don't think are penalties, where people are stepping into other players and winning a penalty, but we're having good goals disallowed because it brushed against someone's hand or kicked. In this case, it kicked it against Benzema's hand.
And it's the constant looking. I must admit, I looked at the laws of the penalty kick last night because I wondered why VRL were complaining. And it's the constant looking at the laws now, isn't it? For someone of my age that's known pretty much the majority of the laws for all his playing career, most of his coaching career, one or two significant law changes came into the game when I was playing and when I was coaching. But now it's every year you're looking constantly changing laws of the game. And I'm not sure how many of them are are for the better. You know, even going back to the beginning of this season when we had the new laws with the goal kicks, where you could pass it inside your own penalty area. I mean, we had a spate, didn't we, at the start of the season where every team was trying to play, you know, little passes to get out the 18-yard box until most of them started realising this is futile. We're not getting anywhere. We're conceding goals. We're putting ourselves under trouble, under pressure. And we see a more realistic, and you kind of forget, you know, that law has been changed because it's not overly used. But it's the constant changing of the laws every summer, during the season. You know, it is difficult to keep up. And I agree with you. Some of them have to be changed. Again, I'm asking for no more changes. I'm asking them maybe the laws to be changed back to how they were. Yeah.
And it's a shame. I'd rather be talking about, because if that goal had been allowed, we'd be talking about Vinicius and Asensio combining to score the goal that wrapped up the league title. As it is, here we are again discussing the handball rule. So, you know, I really wish that they would change that. Shall we move on and have a look at the darker view, which is Barcelona's situation. So they finished off, not quite finished off, but they finally gave up their La Liga title after a pretty miserable campaign. In style as well, Antonello yawning away on the touchline. It was sort of the image of the night, wasn't it? And Messi's frustration boiled over in the interviews afterwards, in which
I didn't think it was too bad. I didn't think he was scathing of anybody but himself and his teammates and the performances in general. I don't speak fluent Spanish, but I trust the translators. And I thought he spoke well. I don't think he said anything that should have demanded too many headlines. He wasn't particularly scathing about the anyone in particular. And he took responsibility for his performances and the team's performances. And clearly what he said was, this isn't good enough. We haven't been good enough. And that pretty much was what you'd expect anybody to say. And I think it was interesting to see him speak in those circumstances. I'm glad he did, because we don't get to see him do many of those, you know, pitch-side interviews after games. But it was the right time for him to stand up, be counted on what has been a horrible season. And do you know what? I look at it now, John, I don't think they've recovered at all from the Liverpool defeat. I think this all goes back to that game when we saw at the end.
That's a sort of turning point, because I put it down to their poor performance in the transfer market over a number of years.
And probably the Liverpool game was a culmination of the poor performance in the transfer market. But I think that really knocked them for six. They went on to lose the Copa del Rey final after that as well. So it was a poor end of last season, despite them winning the league. And they just haven't recovered from this season. And the failings that were there that night against Liverpool have remained throughout the season. To have a managerial change at Barcelona is unusual during the season. The managerial change hasn't worked. I don't know what they're going to do next. I really don't, because of the ongoing situation at the club where a manager's only going to come in for a year, probably, until the new president takes over after the next elections, which are next summer. You ask yourself, is anyone worthwhile going to be interested in taking on the job for a 12-month period? Do you know what? I think there will be. You know, it might not be their preferred choice, but there could be managers around. Take someone like Arsene Wenger, for instance. You know, for a year's work, to work with Messi, it might be, you know, a bit of a basket case of a club for 12 months. But there are worse jobs in football. You'll be highly paid, and you could, if you do half decent and impose your style on Barcelona, then in 12 months' time, your reputation would be enhanced, and you would have earned a few quid. So there will be some managers about that will take it. But I think they need a radical change, a complete change.
But what we haven't seen, what big clubs don't really get that other clubs get all the time, is the disruptive nature of a managerial change in the season, as you say. You know, when we look back on Valverde, lots of people had enough of Valverde. You should remember that when they made the change. But you and I were both. So, you know, my view was, you know, I didn't have that much sympathy for him because, you know, it was boring football and they'd lost big games. But I was fearful that they'd come to regret the change. And I think they probably will have, in that, you know, when you mention candidates, you know, who's a really reliable candidate around, not got a job, who can win leagues? And Ernesto Valverde is the man, isn't it? You know, if it wasn't for the fact that he's already been sacked by Barcelona, he'd probably be the outstanding candidate to take the job, which probably suggests that, you know, it was probably an unwise move to sack him when they did. It's that disruption, isn't it? That's what makes me think, why not just stick with Setien if there's going to be a change of manager to come down the line anyway?
Yeah, I think what you need from you need a manager with a strong personality, because this league, this team is crying out for leadership off the field, and they haven't got it. They won't get it from Valverde. They haven't got it from Setien. They don't get it from the boardroom, and it's lost its way. Well, I think now that the current squad of players they have, and this will change in the summer, I'm sure there'll be departures and new players coming in. Of course they will. But I think they've lost that. They haven't got the players to replicate the style that they had under Pep Guardiola and Luis Enrique and Valverde initially. So why not play a different style of football? It doesn't have to. It's not in the laws of the game, when we're going back to the bloody laws of the game, that Barcelona have to play possession-based 4-3-3, the traditional style. If they haven't got the players, it needs a manager strong enough to come in and say, well, do you know what? I'm sick of this. Every time a team attacks, they look like scoring a goal because we've got nobody in defence. We're going to start to be work from the back. You know, we're going to start to keep more clean sheets. We're not going to concede as many goals. Therefore, we don't have to score 3 goals a game to win a game of football. It's not in the laws of the game that dictate that Barcelona have possession exclusively in the attacking half for 80 of the 90 minutes. You know, it's you know, if teams want to sit back and defend, and, you know, Barcelona must have to make sure, first and foremost, like Real Madrid have done this year, that they have, you know, a better defensive unit. And that's not just the back four, it's the midfield players. You know, it seems to be that Barcelona have to, you know, sling both fullbacks forward, leave the two centre backs on the halfway line on their own. If you've got decent pace in your attack, you don't need to play counter attack football. We just need to get the ball forward into the attacking half, into the grass behind Piqué and Longley. And if you've got one or two quick forwards that you're willing to leave up the pitch, you've got a chance of scoring against Barcelona. So there has to be a change of style.
Actually, going back to Zidane, I wonder whether Zidane, because Zidane was the player he was, because he was this fantasia, this wonderful player, that he had the license to change Real Madrid to having the best defensive record in La Liga, but scrapping through games, in the way that Lopetegui and Rafa Benitez didn't have that license. And I wonder it's the same with Barcelona. If Xavi came in and said basically we need to make this change, I think that would be accepted. But I don't think that it's very difficult for anybody else, very difficult for someone with Quique Setién and the scepticism that goes with him, for him to come in and say, we need to start keeping clean sheets as a priority. I know it's not in the laws of the game, as you say, but it is what's expected by the media.
It is,
and the fans.
I agree with you totally
Barcelona.
About Zidane having the presence and the personality to be able to change that. And also the fact that Real Madrid haven't won enough titles. And that's, you know, that gave them a license to, you know, to do things how they want. They would take in any way possible to win the title over to get the title back over Barcelona. And they've done it with, and don't get me wrong for one minute, that Real Madrid haven't been boring to watch this year. They're not a team that sit back and, you know, play blanket defence and try and hit you on the break. No, I just think they're all aspects of their game are strong. And that's what I was talking about earlier, about the back four are strong, the midfield are strong, the attacking players, Benzema in particular, have been strong. And I just think, you know, Real Madrid, that haven't shown, they haven't needed to score three goals to win a game of football. You know, to concede 24, to have a better defensive record than to concede 23, have a better defensive record than Atletico is some going. And I think that you know, combined with, I mean, what Zidane does, and we've said it on this podcast, and I hear it on other TV programs and stuff about, you know, it's hard to identify what he actually does. Do you know what? I think he keeps things simple. He has outstanding footballers who respect him, that want to play for him in general. Let's forget the Gareth Bale. I know we have a laugh about that. But in general, the players at Real Madrid, the majority of them he uses, the majority of them respect him. They understand exactly what their jobs are. And do you know what? He keeps it simple. I think we live in a world where we, not only in football, we complicate so many issues now. And we forget at times that it comes down to players, you know, in football, players knowing their jobs, trusting the manager to come up with the right tactics and the right team selections, and just, you know, keeping it simple and then relying on natural instincts of players, relying on the talent and the ability of some of those world-class players we've talked about from Real Madrid. And sometimes, you know, there is nothing wrong with that. In the past, it served Barcelona well because that was their natural game and their natural instincts. But if you haven't got the players to do it, you cannot continue to play the way that Barcelona tried to. So Real Madrid, with Zidane, he's gone in and he's not telling Modric to do anything he can't do. He's not asking Benzema to do anything he can't do. Ramos and Varane, Carvajal. It's all good, solid, simple, sensible football. And the players know their roles. They know their jobs and they know their targets. It you know, so then just simplifies things. And it's not easy to do. It really isn't. Their opponents last night, Villarreal, good example. Been playing well. They had the one slip up against Barcelona, and there was another defeat as well, Real Sociedad, I think it was. And they go to Real Madrid last night, they need one more point for the Europa League, and Calleja completely changes their total style of football. Plays more defensive players, leaves out players that keep possession of the ball, that can hold on to the ball, and leaves Moreno a million miles away from anyone who can get near him to attack Real Madrid. And what happened? It was a horrible performance from Villarreal that he had to change at half time. And in the second half, suddenly, you know, Villarreal look like Villarreal. And I just think sometimes, you know, managers, coaches, media complicate this quite simple game of football. And Zidane has just come in with his approach and laid everything out for the players. And they've followed it to the letter and they've had success.
Right, let's take a quick break and we'll have a look at the drinks break required. We'll check our tactics. Quick drinks break and then we'll be back with the best of the rest. Welcome back. Let's have a look at the rest of what happened. Athletic weren't very happy against Leganés, but poor old Leganés, they needed a bit of a break this season. They've lost their best players to no fault of their own. Somehow they've managed to take it down to the wire because Celta Vigo are frankly not very good, or they're certainly not as good. They've got a lot of people like Celta Vigo. They get a good press, I think, don't they? And they're not very good for the good press. So between them, that's the relegation battle. We'll get to Mallorca in a bit, but there we are, Terry. That's what it's come down to: Leganés or Celta Vigo for the last relegation place.
Yep, Leganés. It's incredible. It really is. I mean, the old story, it's quite boring now that they lost their two strikers. Then they've since then lost Oscar Rodriguez, Guido Carrillo, Unai Bustinza. I think I've joked on the podcast about, or not joked, but I've said he's probably got the best attitude of any player in La Liga. I mean, he puts his head in for tackle, and I've literally seen it. I'm not just using a cliche. I've seen him tackle with his head on the floor in a 50-50 where some players wouldn't put their foot. And he was on crutches the day before the game, and he played last night. So they're struggling to get bodies out because they've got a lack of players. These young players we haven't seen before that are now, you know, starting the game or coming on. What Aguirre has done there in those circumstances is astonishing. I'm not fussed who stays up, who goes down. But, you know, I can't be alone in thinking with all that's gone against Leganés this season, there will be sympathy and a lot of people that are, you know, not interested in Leganés or Celta, don't have a preference. They must surely be thinking, can you imagine if this team does stay up? They're literally on their last legs. And as I say, for a player who was watching training the day before on crutches, and he played in that game. And, you know, to see, as you said, Levante put up such a good performance in a game that, you know, they didn't have to go and bust the gut to win, to show that, you know, to win 3-2 away from home against an opponent who's got everything to fight for. Celta got Espanyol in their next game away from home. Yeah, I know. Leganés, you know, home to Real Madrid. That fixture takes on a different case entirely now, doesn't it? That I know Real Madrid are still going to want to win it, but they're going to be celebrating. We've seen that, you know, it does happen. Yeah, it does happen. Champions League around the corner, players will be left out. They'll have to revert.
Not a bad one, is it?
Bloody giving old Gareth Bale a run out, maybe. Seeing who, if he's up for it. But it is at Leganés. And with their mentality they've got now, the job's done for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
So that if Real Madrid needed to get points in this game, then you won't back Leganés at all. But with what we've seen from them, with the fact that Real Madrid have won the league, they have a chance, you know. It's astonishing that they're still in with a chance. Sad to see Mallorca go. They've been spirited, just not been good enough. But for Leganés to still have a chance, and against Celta, just 1 point's difference, it's all, you know, one of those positions at the table on Sunday that we can look at with real interest.
So let's have a look at the top. So Atletico are third, Sevilla fourth, now a 2 point gap between them. So it doesn't particularly matter which way they finish, except to them, I suppose. So Villarreal still need something. So they're fifth with 57. Then Real Sociedad have got 55 points. And then Getafe, because seventh place will be a European place, on 54. But then Valencia, 53. Granada, 53. And Athletic and Osasuna, 51. You'd have to do the maths and see who haven't done the maths to see whether they could make it on terms of head-to-heads, etc. And I'm not going to. We haven't got all day. So, I mean, pretty much it will be, you know, but it's quite a day, isn't it, on Sunday in terms of that battle for those remaining Europa League places.
It is. I mean, Real Sociedad are away to Atletico, so that's a tough fixture. They had two tough games left, didn't they? Sevilla at home, Atletico away. I'm looking at Granada Athletic playing each other. Getafe away at Levante, who've just come off that good win. So there are some really good games there. Sevilla at home to Valencia. So Valencia got a tough fixture there. Villarreal at home to Eibar. That would be, I think Villarreal are clearly strong favourites, aren't they? Eibar's job is well and truly done. And, you know, an away trip to Villarreal, if Villarreal, you know, are attack-minded, which they will be in this game, then they unless Calleja goes all out to get the draw. And plays a really negative midfield, Ruben Peña back in midfield again and clocking up the midfield with defensive players, leave Cazorla on the bench. But I know, I would imagine Villarreal were the hot favourites to go through. And it's going to be touch and go for the rest of them. Really is. As you say, it's surprising that Valencia still have a chance of somehow sneaking their way in on the back of their, you know, slim 1-0 win against Espanyol.
Yeah, never a good sign when you get to the end of the season and the it's Rafete against Voro, is it? The two caretaker managers inside doesn't suggest it's been a good season for either of those clubs, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, both of those teams have, you know, if Valencia can salvage somehow and climb above Getafe. I mean, Valencia get a win, Getafe lose, then Valencia really, it's not impossible for Valencia to do. And Granada as well. I mean, you're looking at the fixtures. I mean, Granada could easily slip into this. You know, it's what they've done is you know, an incredible achievement this season. There's so much to look forward to on Sunday. There's so many teams have had good seasons, but the two you just mentioned, Valencia and Espanyol, have had seasons that they want to put behind them.
Just before we go, just say something a bit more about Granada, because they, when we did the predictions at the start of the season, they were 20th. They were the team that most people said would go down. And what are they, 9th in the table? And as you say, going into the last set of games with a chance of qualifying for Europe. And having, you know, and they're fun as well, aren't they? You know, they haven't, you know, it hasn't been a sort of a miserable performance, a miserable tactical setup to grind them into this position. They've been so impressive.
Well, no, yeah, and whilst we're doing that, honourable mentions, Osasuna needs one winning. We talked about Barcelona, we didn't mention Osasuna in that. I mean, for them to be newly promoted, get 51 points. For Granada to be newly promoted, 9th, 53 points. You know, it's Granada have, you know, beaten Barcelona this year, Osasuna beating Barcelona away from home. But those two teams have been a real boost to La Liga this season. I think that people were probably looking at the previous spell that both those teams had in their last season in La Liga. I can remember them both. I think they both went through about 25 managers that season. You know, new managers turning up every 3 or 4 weeks, it appeared, and they were both dreadful. They both disappeared.
Including Tony Adams, of course.
Yep, yeah. They both disappeared and then, you know, both come back together and they totally revitalised. You know, the clubs have been turned around. Granada have got some smashing players. I wasn't sure whether they would want European football. I'm not sure it's wise for them to finish in the top 7. I know teams and players don't want to lose games on purpose. But when you look at the effect it's had on Espanyol, if Granada were to finish in 7th, some of their better players are on loan. If they finish 7th, then, you know, they're going to be starting their season again in the space of probably 3 or 4 weeks to qualify for the Europa League, such as Espanyol had to do last season. Of course, this summer is entirely different. So it's a tricky one, you know, the 7th place finish. We can finish. The importance is to try and finish in 5th or 6th. 7th means going through that qualification period, and we've seen the impact it's had on Espanyol this season.
So, I mean, Getafe have done okay with it, haven't they? They're still in the Europa League, aren't they? So are there any teams in there that you would genuinely, you think, don't want it? I mean, I guess it's most important for Valencia, is it, in terms of the size of the club and the budget that they've got and Peter Lim's ambition and all of that? Are they the ones who are most desperate to get into that Europa League for next season?
You would think so, but I'm not so sure that the finances come with the Europa League, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think it's a total different, you know, aspect to the top four, finishing the top four. We know the money is in the Champions League. 7th place, it's a tricky one, you know, because I really do feel it impacts on a whole season. I mean, the ones to look at in England, the Wolves, what they've done, how have Wolves done that? They did it last year. And the Wolves haven't got a massive squad. They've got a fantastic set of players, fantastic manager, and they're still playing a year on from when they started their season. I know it's extraordinary circumstances, but they're still going strong. I'm not so sure. I mean, most of those teams that are fighting for 7th probably could deal with it. Real Sociedad, Getafe. I think Getafe is questionable because of, you know, they can run out of steam with the way that they play. They haven't got a massive squad. They would need to bring in additions for that as well. And clubs are reluctant to go out and, you know, check the checkbook at it for a Europa League run. Champions League, totally different. But the Europa League, if your squad isn't the biggest, Athletic, you know, they're pretty much out the running. Well, they are out the running now. They maybe, you know, would have even been stretched because their squad, very good, isn't as big as some. So You know, it'd be interesting to see how Real Sociedad cope with, you know. I think if you get in the fifth or sixth and you're straight into the competition, that's pretty straightforward to deal with. That should be an adventure, like Getafe have done this season. They didn't have to qualify.
Hmm.
But I think when you start those early games, it does become, you know, takes its toll because of your preparation for the season isn't right. If you don't start the season right, like the Espanyol didn't, then you end up with a season. You can end up in a situation like Espanyol where you know your season just doesn't get going. You only win five games. Espanyol, you know, have only won two games at home. Dreadful. Yet they were seventh last year.
Right. Well, we go one more time, Terry, on Sunday night, except those of us who are suspended. 28 players suspended, apparently. I haven't counted them myself. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Anyway, so we go again. Valladolid Betis is the only one that is out of time, which it says just how much is up for grabs on the last day of the season, isn't it? So Atletico Sociedad, Alaves, Barcelona.
I think Barcelona has been changed as well now.
Has it now?
I think there's three games. One at Alaves Barca is the early one, which is 4 o'clock. Then there's two at 5:30. Then the rest at later all being played together. So it shows seven games all being played simultaneously on the last day of the season because there's still so much to deal with. So should be a good evening.
Yes. So enjoy that. They'll all on La Liga TV in the UK. They'll all be on somewhere. Well, hopefully. I'm not promising. So hopefully everyone in the world can watch it at some point. That's fingers crossed for that. La Liga TV in the UK. Make sure you watch as much as you can on there. And we'll be back with another podcast after that. And we'll be wrapping up the season. And, okay, enjoy your Spanish football this weekend. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.